Ah, okay, I'll speak after. It's fine. Says the Gemara, Chofeh Mabes, we're on the last daf of the third Perek Mitzvah Shem, and we're trying to finish the Perek by the end of the week. We are up to the Gemara, where it says, V'loi yiskase loy b'mayim horoyim, v'loi b'meha mishra. The first word on the line is Erevo. The Mishnah, early on in the Perek, was talking about saying Kriya Shema whilst you are in the water, and it says that you should not cover yourself with filthy water. Says the Gemara, V'loi yiskase loy b'mayim horoyim, V'loi b'me'a mishre, ad shiyatil l'toichon mai. Until you pour water, meaning pure clean water, into the dirty water. And that way you will be metaher, or you'll be mevatlit. Now that seems a rather strange proposition. There you are in a filthy, dirty river, and you're going to pour water into the river to try and clean it. You're going to need millions of gallons. What's going on over here? Says the Gemara, the Kamo Mayo, how much water, Romi, is he going to pour in the Ozil and keep on going? It seems a very unlikely suggestion that you've got to keep on pouring water. But Kamo Mayo, how much water can you expect the guy to pour in?
Hello.
Says the Gemara, Elo, Hochi Ka'omar. Rather, this is what's meant. You've got to read it as follows. You've got to split the Mishnah into two. Loi yiskase, loi b'mayim horoyim, v'loi b'me'a mishre. Do not be covered either in dirty water or water that flax has been soaked in, that also clouds and makes the water unpleasant. Klal at all. Meaning over there, it will not help this eitzah of pouring water in, because it's just not practical. Meiraglayim, that's where we say, ad shiyatil l'toichon mayim liyikro. If, however, the person's in the presence of meiraglayim, then that's where we can suggest this eitzah of being matil mayim, pouring water over it in order to be mevatel the meiraglayim. So obviously, the eitzah of being mevatel mayim roim or mei mishra is obviously impractical. And when we gave this eitzah, we were referring to a different case. Which case was that? The case of meiraglayim. Says Rashi. Further up the Amud. Mayim horoim means sruchim. There's an unpleasant smell. Meha mishra means sheshoirim shom hapishton. That's where you soak flax and canvas. And again, it's very odorous. The kamo mayo romi v'ozil. Kamo yashlich l'toichom. How much water, how on earth can you pour water? How much water can you pour into them? The yivaklein, in order to be mevatel them. Haloi, but surely merubim heim. They are plentiful, there's too much. You can't be mevatel a river. Says Rashi, you're right. It's referring to the case of miraglaim where mu'otim him. Yes, you cannot be expected to be mevatel a river. But if you've got a small amount of miraglaim, which is in a kli, as Rashi now says, miraglaim mu'otim him v'him b'kli, u'ba likroi is kriya shema etzlom. And he's now coming to recite Kriya Shema in their presence. So that is where we can be mvatl the mayim, the miraglayim, by pouring water over them. Back into the Gemara. Tanu Rabbana. Kamo yatil l'toichon mayim. So now that we know what we're talking about, we're referring to the case of meraglayim. So the big question becomes, how much do you actually have to pour in? How much mayim? Says the Gemara, we have machloikis. according to the Tanakama, kol shehu, even a minimal amount, which is a very big chiddush. Reb Zakkai Oimer a revius, which is not such a big chiddush. We know that a revius, quarter of a lug, always has significance. That's always the shear of chashivus. Whether it be in the kois that you made your kiddush on Friday night, or the kois that you made your havdalah on last night, a revius is the shear. But revius also has significance with regard to being metahir. In one place, the Gemara says that essentially the minimal amount for a mikvah or a mayon is a revius. Practically, you have to have 40 sol, but essentially the koyach to be metahir comes from a revius. So if I pour a revius over the meraglayim, that will be metahir them, mevatel them. The bigger chiddush was the first shita, that even if you just pour a kol shehu, that would suffice. That's a tremendous chiddush. Why would that help? You have a relatively large, even though it's not so much, but a much larger amount of meraglayim. You pour a few drops of plain water in, and that will be mevatelem. That's a tremendous chiddush. Says the Gemara, so we have a machlokes now. We have a machlokes, is it a mashahu or is it a revius? The Tanakhama says a mashahu, a kol shehu, and Reb Zakkai says a revius. Says the Gemara, Amar Nachman, machlokes lebesoif. This whole machlokes that we mentioned, is it a kol shehu or is it a revius? You should know that machlokes is only lebesoif at the end, which we'll translate in a moment. Aval betchila. But if it's not at the end, it's the beginning, then kol shehen, everybody would agree that a minimal amount is enough. Now, what does that mean in the beginning? What does that mean in the end? Look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Lebasoif, Shemei raglayim bekli. Besoif means, are you pouring the water into the kli after the mei raglayim has already landed there or beforehand? That's what Tchila and Soif is referring to. Lebesoif, says Rashi, means Shemei raglayim bekli. The mei raglayim is already in the kli. And now he's pouring water into the miraglayim that is there already. It's only there that Reb Zakkai was machmir and said that you need a whole revius because the miraglayim has already found its place there. If we were dealing with a case where you poured the water in before the miraglayim ever landed there, shekodmu amayim miraglayim, if the mayim was there first, it was shekodmu, it was before the miraglayim only landed afterwards, then divrei hakoil kol shehu, we're learning a tremendous chiddush. Then everybody would agree a kol shehu is enough. It's true they had a machloikas, and Reb Zakkai says you need a revius. That's only when the meraglayim came first. So I need now to be mevatel the entire amount of meraglayim. So then Reb Zakkai says a revius is what's necessary. But if I poured the water in first, we'll soon see why, then even if you pour in a small amount of water, even Reb Zakkai would agree that that would suffice. Why is that? Says Rashi, Divrei HaKoel Kol Shehu, and everybody would agree that a small amount would suffice. Shekashematil mei raglayim bekli libasayif. Because when he comes afterwards, after having already poured the mayim into the kli, he's now going to pour the mei raglayim into the kli. But what was there first? The mayim was there first. Rishoin, drop by drop, the first drops of Meraglaim, Shanufa Lutech Amaim, Misbatel. Vafalpi, Shem Rabim, Vahoilchim, even though they will continuously be more and more and more Meraglaim, it doesn't matter. Kvar Boklu, they are already bottled. What does that mean, they're already bottled? So here we have the famous principle. We know that whenever you have a mixture, minority and majority, so the majority wins the day, achare rabim lahatos. It will be mevatl, the mute. So what would be Rabbi Sain following scenario? Imagine you have 1 liter of soup, kosher soup, sitting on your flame. And in it dropped a small amount of non-kosher liquid. How much? A quarter of a liter. So the liter will be mevatel the quarter of a liter. So the soup is still fine. Now, how much have I got in the pot now? I've got 1.25 liters. And now I drop in another quarter liter of non-kosher soup. And then I pour in a third quarter, and then a fourth, and then a fifth. So 1 second. I've now actually got, if I've poured 5 times a quarter of a liter, I've got 5 quarters. That's 1.25. And how much kosher soup did I have in the beginning? I only had 1 liter. So it turns out that the non-kosher element in this soup, l'chayra, should now win the day. Because I now actually have more non-kosher soup than soup, but that is not true. It's a mistake. Why is it a mistake? Because here we have the tremendous chiddush that when the roiv is mevatel the miut, when you poured in the quarter liter of soup into the liter, what happened to the quarter liter of non-kosher? It became koshered. Just like you put somebody tummy into a mikveh, he becomes tohir. You put a goy into a mikveh, he becomes a Jew. So the trefer food became kosher. Such that what do I now have in my pot? I've got 1.25 liters of soup. How kosher much of it is kosher? 100%.
All of them.
All of them. It's not that I've got 1 liter, which is kosher, and another quarter of a liter, which is non-kosher. Now it builds up. No, the more I pour in, the more kosher soup I have. That's what's called rishon rishon. What does rishon rishon mean? The first one, bit by bit, it's all bottle. Yosef, I think you're not muted. You're very welcome to stay unmuted, but just to let you know. I'll call upon him. So we have the same over here as well. When you have the Meraglayim falling into the water, now we understand why there's a difference between the water falling into the Meraglayim or the Meraglayim falling into the water. What's the difference? Who cares who was there first? Of course we care. Because if the Meraglayim was there first, so I'm going to have to mevatel the whole thing. And that you need a koyach to be metairit, which is a revius. But if the water was there first, so as the meraglaim lands in it, drip by drip, each drop of meraglaim is absorbed by the mayim, which is already there, and it will become botel, such that what do I now have in my kli? I don't have part water and part meraglaim. It's all considered to be mine. So then even Reb Zakkai would admit that I don't need a revius. Even if I have less than a revius, as long as when the Meraglaim initially landed in the water, I had slightly more mayim than the Meraglaim, so it would be mevatlet. Even though at the end of the day, I've actually poured in more Meraglaim than there was mayim in the first place. But that's like pouring more non-kosher soup into the kosher soup. It doesn't matter. Because as it went in, it became koshered. So let's have a look at Rashi again. That's what it means. We're making a distinction between betchila and basif. Says Rashi, avol lechatchila shekodmu amayim lemei raglayim. If the water arrived in the kli before the mei raglayim, so then the divrei hakol kol shehu. And even Reb Zakkai would agree that you only need a kol shehu. Why is that? Shekashematil meiraglayim bekli lebesayif. Because when the mayim is there first, and I'm now at the end pouring in the meiraglayim, what happens? Rishoin, rishoin, one by one, sheinoifel l'toich hamayim. As it begins falling into the mayim, what happens to it? Misbatil. It just keeps on being gobbled up and being koshered. Ba'afal pi sheim rabim v'hoilchim. And even though it's more and more and more and more and more, you keep on adding more miraglayim, it doesn't matter why. Kvar botloi. So you cannot now add up. It's not like taking a calculator time and saying, well, how much miraglayim went in? It makes no difference. Even if in the final analysis you actually poured in more miraglayim than there was mayim in the first place, it still doesn't matter because as the miraglayim entered, it was bottle. And that's why we're making a distinction. So it turns out, even though we have a machloikas, how much mayim do you need? Is it a mashu or is it a revius? So Rav Nachman is telling you that is only a machloikas in the case of betchilo, where the meiraglayim landed first, and you want to now be metaher the entire body of meiraglayim. So that's when I need a revius, according to Rav Zakkai. But if the meiraglayim did not land first, rather the mayim landed first, so the incoming meiraglayim will be bottled drip by drip. So if you don't need a revius, even a mashu will be enough. Yeah.
Just really a question. So why is a revius enough? Doesn't it have to be rov?
Yeah, so normally you need, like I said, but a revius has a koyach to be metahir. A revius has a koyach to be metahir, like a mikvah. Like a mikvah.
So it still could be technically less.
Even if I have 1 liter of mei raglayim, if I pour over them a revius, which is much less than a liter of mayim, that will be metahir them. Not because of rov, like you said, because it has a koyach to be metahir. Right, 1 second, just 2 seconds. Right, so that's the first opinion in the Gemara. Says the Gemara, the Rav Yosef Omar. Everything we said until now was the opinion of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman tells you the machlekas is only when it's betchilom, but if it's besayif, if the miraglayim is going in at the end, then a mashu is enough. Rav Yosef says, no, I disagree. Machloikas lechatchila. To the contrary, the machloikas is only lechatchila when the water was there first. Even then, there's opinion that says you need a revius and yesh oimrin amashu. But if it's at the end, if the miraglayim is coming in at the end, the mayim is coming in at the end, then divrei hakoil, revius, then everybody would necessitate a revius. That means both Rav Nachman and Rav Yosef both agree that the machloikas, whether you need a revius or a mashuhu, was not said in all cases. It was only said in one case, The question is, in which case? So according to Rav Nachman, the machlokes is only lebasoif when the water goes in at the end. Otherwise, everybody would agree a mashuhu. And Rav Yosef says the opposite, that no, the machlokes is only lechatchila when the mayim is there in the beginning. But if the mayim is put at the end, then everybody would need a revius. So what are we paskin? Says the Gemara, Omale Rav Yosef l'shame. So Rav Yosef says to his shamash, to his gabai, I see li reviosa de maya. Please bring me a revius of mayim, ke Rabbi Zakai. Says Rashi two words, I see li reviosa afilu bitchilo. Even bitchilo. Even if the mayim is there first, the miraglayim landed in it, not the other way around, you still need a revius, which means, halacha lemaisa, we paskin that you always need a revius, even betchila, not only lebasoif, but even betchila. And this is, in fact, halacha lemaisa. So if anybody ever finds himself in a situation where they need to recite Kriya Shema and his miraglayim on the floor, it turns out that you'd have to pour over revius whether the miraglayim is already there or whether you want to put mayim in order to catch the miraglayim. Either way, you've got to have a revius. How much, by the way, is a revius? It's machlokes, either 150 cc or 86 cc, but either way, it's not a huge amount of mayim. Okay, back into the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Says the Gemara, Graf Shel Rei. Now, we all are familiar with the expression of Graf Shel Rei. Where from? From Shabbos. Everybody knows that Graf Shel Rei is the big heter and Hilchas Muktzah on Shabbos. But we need to know what the Makoir of this expression is. The Makoir of the expression is over here, right here in the Gemara. Graf Shel Rei, as we've mentioned many, many times, Meir Rav Rabbi Yisai, the hygiene and the bathroom system in the times of Chazal was not much to write home about, and it was incomparable to what we have today. There was literally either a kli in the house or just a public place in the field, and that's where people used to be relieved. That's where people would relieve themselves. So a Graf Shel Rei is the kli which contains in it, which was a portable kli, which either has meraglayim or tsoyo in it. Now, the reason why we happen to know this expression with regard to Hilchos Shabbos is because essentially that should be osur to move on Shabbos. It should be muktzah. Why should it be muktzah? Because there's no usage from it. Anything that has no use is muktzah on Shabbos. A piece of broken glass, that's muktzah on Shabbos, has nothing to do with it. So if you have a kli in which there's meraglayim or tsoya, it should be muktzah. And yet there is a special heta of chazal to move the graf shel rei. Why? Because it is so unbecoming and so unpleasant to have this kli sitting in your room. It'll be mevatl all of your oinig Shabbos. So Mamela Chazal allowed you to transport it out of the room to tip it up elsewhere. So that now becomes the classic example. So we now use the phrase Graf Shel Rei to refer to any case of something which is repulsive, which between you and me, Ramay Rav Raboisai, every single one of us relies upon, and it's a big chidush. Where do we all rely on this? Because otherwise, quite frankly, how on earth can you clean up the Friday night table? You've had your chicken course, and on the plate there's leftover bones from the chicken. Those are muktzah. So how can you clean up? Essentially, l'chayra, you should have to leave that on the table until Motzei Shabbos. There is absolutely nothing you could do with that bone, or a leftover dried out piece of chicken, or a bottle lid you've got nothing to do with. etc., etc. So why are you allowed to clean the table? The answer is graf shel rei.
If you had a dog, you could give him the bone, right?
Enoch lami, but you don't. Oh. Well, I think you have at least two dogs in your building, Rabbi Leo David Amen.
Yes, I certainly do. And one of them is very nice and polite and doesn't make a sound. And the other one, you hear all the time.
Neither of them belong to Rav Davidovich, I can assure you.
No, they don't.
No. I'll call Bonnie Boyfen. So what's our heter to move your dried out, broken chicken bone on Friday night into the kitchen? Ait mukta. The answer is graf shel rei. But we mustn't forget, graf shel rei just means the kli in which there's meraglaim or tsoyo. But that now becomes a general phrase, a general heter, for whenever you want to be metaltal mukta, something which is repulsive. Imagine if you had to sit the entire Shabbos with your chicken bone sitting on your Friday night table, that would be repulsive. Which, by the way, Meirai v'Raboisai, is very, very, very famous Shaila. Then what do you do about Shalosh Shudos? Forget for the moment the question of Hachana, you're not allowed to prepare from Shabbos to Motzah Shabbos. Forget that. You finish, let's say, for argument's sake, eating Shalosh Shudos, let's say Shabbos evening just before Maariv, 5 minutes early. Are you allowed to clean up the table now? In all honesty, is it so repulsive to leave it there for 3 minutes? I'm not talking about hachana. That's a separate shaila. You're not allowed to prepare on Motzah Shabbos for Shabbos. I'm not talking about that. Is it repulsive? One has to be very, very honest. I'll ask you a bigger question. Imagine on Friday night, you would clean up the table and everything looks spick and span, Baruch Hashem. Your guests have gone home and everything's clean. And then you look at the table and you see, oh no, I left one item behind. At the end of the meal, for argument's sake, you served nuts. We call them monkey nuts. What do you guys call them? Peanuts or something? Some strange phrase.
Cashews, almonds.
Almonds, cashews, whatever. We'll call it monkey nuts. Either way, you've got one shell sitting on your large table. Now, this is a very, very difficult question. I understand that when you finished your meal and the whole table is covered with shells and cups, and that's all graf shel rei. The whole table looks repulsive. You've cleaned the entire table and you just realize you missed one small pistachio nut shell, which is sitting in the corner of the table, minding its business, not bothering anyone. What heter have you got to take it off?
Well, because it's a graf shel rei.
I'm not sure if these are allowed in the 90s. I'll call upon him. So this has a big question from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, asking this question. And really, the answer is you have to be perfectly honest. If you are the type of person where having one solitary pistachio shell on your table does not really bother you, then I'm unaware of any heter to move it. If in perfect honesty you say, no, it does bother me. I like to have my Friday night table absolutely spick and span before I go to bed. It should look nice and clean, the covered Shabbos. Even one sweet wrapper or, which is Eliyahu, I can see you nodding your head, or one pistachio nut on the table bothers you, then that's graf shel rei. And by the way, I'm sorry, you cannot get out of it, because the post can say if it bothers your wife, then the husband's allowed to move it as well. So I'm afraid you can't say, I'm sorry, the rabbi said that the wife has to move it. No, you have to. But a person has to be very honest. Now, Meirav Raboisai, I know we're veering off topic a little bit, but this is very, very negea when, for this coming Shabbos. All of us will have this shaila this coming Shabbos. Why? Because we're going to be eating Shabbos Shudos, but unlike on a normal Shabbos, where essentially you're allowed to eat after Shkia, all the way up until Maariv, but this Shabbos you can't. This Shabbos, because it's a fast on Motzah Shabbos Tisha B'Av, you've got to stop at Shkia. Shkia is at 7:48. Now, you're not allowed to eat after 7:48, but Shabbos is only out at about 8:30. So again, are you allowed to clean the table after your Shana Shudos? So you have a double shaila. Number one, you have a question of mukta. You've got some leftover nuts or pieces of pasta or grape seeds, whatever it may be. Number two, you have a question of hachana. Why are you cleaning the table now? In order to prepare for Matzah Shabbos, you can't do hachana. So the Eitzah HaYehudzah, if you're looking for one, again, you have to be honest. There is no chiyuv, by the way, to sit on the floor after Shkia. You only need to sit on the floor after Tzeisak Rechavim. So for the Eitzah HaYehudzah is, either way, you've got to stop before Shkia. No question about that. So then if you're planning after Shalosh Shudos, in that final half an hour, to learn, obviously things to do with Tisha B'Av, so then you'll have a heter, you'll have a double heter. It will not be hachana, because I'm not preparing for Matzah Shabbos, I'm preparing for right now. I want to clean the table because I want to learn from the table now, not after Shabbos. And also I will now have the heter of Graf Shel Rei, because I can hardly learn at my dining room table if there's an eggshell there and a pistachio peel and a bottle lid. But if in all honesty you are not planning on doing that, if you'd rather go to your other room and sit on the couch and read a sefer, then the table should be left until Motzei Shabbos. Very, very important halacha. So I know we veered off topic a little bit, but all of this comes from our sugya, Graf Shel Rei. So Graf Shel Rei in Hilchas Mukta now takes on a very general meaning, and it refers to anything which is repulsive. Anything which is repulsive. I remember I was once in somebody's house, very interesting shaila. Somebody had a baby and was making a Shalom Zach on Friday night. Now, his wife was in hospital. She wasn't there the whole Shabbos. And this person, he has other children. They were all parked out at various cousins. And he himself, the Baal Simcha, was actually not staying in his own apartment for Shabbos. He was staying elsewhere, or at least eating meals elsewhere. Maybe he was sleeping at home, but he was eating meals elsewhere. What do you do after the Shalom Zach? Are you allowed to clean the table? So what are you going to say? It's Graf Shel Rei. Why is it Graf Shel Rei? Close the door of your dining room. You're not eating there anyway for the remainder of Shabbos. You've been invited out for all meals. So how can you say it's repulsive? Repulsive to who? Nobody's using the room. So not only are there questions of hachana, that's even if you move items that are not mukta, but kal v'chaymer, if you move items, some dirty cup or some pistachio peel or some half-started grape, what heter have you got to move that? Why is that not mukta? If he's planning on using his table, albeit not to eat, but to learn there, so you can clean up. It's not a chana, you've got a heter of Graf Shel Rei. But if not, you're not planning to step foot in your dining room for the remainder of Shabbos, I don't see any heter to clean up the table. It's both hachana and also mukta. You have no heter of Graf Shel Rei. Okay, so we veered off topic a little bit. So let's hold it over here, and Mr. Hashem will continue tomorrow, all being well.
Shikar.
Call to have a great day.